Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war. With the cross of Jesus going on before, Christ the royal master leads against the foe.
Ah, yes, forward into battle. Shalom aleichem to all my white Christian Israelite brothers and sisters out there. This is Word for Word. I'm Pastor Steve. I want to remind everybody that this Friday on Yahweh's Covenant People, I won't be co-hosting with Eli. He's going to have a special guest. And you need to tune in and listen to that. It's going to be a really dandy show. And you won't want to miss it. He's going to have a judge on who leans toward Christian identity. And by golly, that's rare. It's like pulling hen's teeth to find somebody in the court system that might actually believe the truth, but it's going to be an exciting show, and you're not going to want to miss it. And I get to sit back and listen for a change. Pardon me. We did the chapter with the 10 words, better known as the 10 commandments, yesterday, chapter 20 of Exodus. And we're going to go into chapter 21 today. These are further laws that Yahweh is giving Moshe. And there are some very specific passages in here, which I will be highlighting for you. With chapter 2, verse 2 rather, you'll see that the difference between buying a Hebrew as a servant, as a bond servant to pay debts, etc., and a non-Adamic beast of the field. So let's get into chapter 21 here. And we'll progress through the day. Verse 1. Now these are the judgments which you shall set before them. That's Yahweh speaking to Moshe. Verse 2. If you buy a servant, that's a bond servant, not a slave, by a servant that is an Ibri, that's Hebrew in Hebrew, 5680, comes from Eber, 6 years shall he serve, and in the seventh he shall go free for nothing. There's that magic a wonderful number 7 that's holy to Yahweh. The seventh day is the Shabbat, and the seventh year is freedom completely for the servant. His debt is paid. They do the same thing in the Jubilee every so often. The seventh, all debts are canceled. Boy, if we went by that today, we're overdue for some financial freedom, as well as freedom from usury, which is prohibited in the Bible. Verse 3, if he came in by himself, he shall go out by himself. If he possessed a wife, then his wife shall go out with him. If his master, 113, Adon, has given him a wife, and she has borne him sons or daughters, the wife and the children shall be her master's, and he shall go out by himself, because they were his property. They would, if they are Hebrew, they would be under the 7-year thing as well, but not until they're 7 years. Let's say he's 3 years into his service and he gets a wife from his master. He gives this woman to him, and he goes out on his 7th year. She's got 3 more years to serve. And the sons or daughters, they've got 7 years, because that's an investment. That's how it's set up. I didn't write it. That's what it says. Verse 5, and if the servant shall plainly say, I love my master, my wife, and my children, I will not go out free. Verse 6, then shall bring his master him to the judges, and that's 430. That's Elohim. Judges, that's one of the meanings of Elohim, like in the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth starts out when the judges ruled the land. Well, when Ruth is going to go with Naomi back to the territory of Yehuda from the occupied territory of Moab. There were no Moabites there. She was not a Moabite. She was an Israelite. She says, your family shall be my family, and your Elohim shall be my Elohim. Your judge. She's changing familial affiliation and territorial jurisdiction into the territory of a different judge. She doesn't say, your God will be my God, like she was worshiping a different God. That is not so. That is the deliberate misinterpretation by the Christ haters to try to sully the birthline of Yeshua Messiah. Because Ruth married Boaz, who was a prince of Israel, of the tribe of Yehuda. And a prince did not marry a Moabite, because they're not allowed in the congregation. And that's a major part of Israelite life, is to be able to worship in the congregation. So he would not want to father half-breed children with a Moabite, and those children not be allowed to be in the congregation. That was anathema to them. That was just, oh no, absolutely not. He married an Israelite wife. Ruth was an Israelite living in the occupied territory of Moab. So here's another instance where the word Elohim is used as judges. Didn't bring him to the gods, brought him to the judges. Elohim. Shall bring he him to the door or to the doorpost, and shall bore his master through his ear with an awl. Ow! And shall serve he him forever. An earring in a man was a sign of servitude. So he would be wearing an earring. Not so with a woman. Verse 7. And if a man sells his daughter to be a maidservant, and they did that then. She shall not go out as the men servants do. If she is displeasing, 7451, Ra, that can mean evil, displeasing, all kind of negative. If she is displeasing in the eyes of her master, who has not betrothed her to himself, betrothed is 3259, then he shall let her be redeemed, 6299. He has no power, 4910, to sell, 4376, her to people of another race, 5237, Nakri. Seeing as he has dealt deceitfully, 898, with her. In other words, she's going to be a maidservant like Bilhah and the others. In other words, she can be a concubine. If he buys her for that purpose, she has sex with him and bears children for him. She is not a wife. She's a concubine, a woman that was in servitude to bear children. Boy, that would go over well today. Oh, boy. Verse 9. And if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall do with her after the manner of daughters. Now, verse 10. This is a shocker. If he takes him another wife, wife is in italics, it just says, if he takes him another, and wife is implied. Her food, 7607, in other words, her sustenance. Her clothing, 3682. And her right of cohabitation, 5772, he shall not diminish, 1639. She lives in a house and he still has to sleep with her. Lay with her sexually. Her sexual rights don't get abrogated. Because she's a concubine. And if he takes a wife, she doesn't have to play second fiddle and just be a cleanup person. She still sleeps in his bed. They have to have a schedule. Like Leah and Rachel, and he had to visit them on a regular basis. That's why they had so many kids. Verse 11, and if he does not do these three things for her, then she shall go out free without money. In other words, if you're not going to treat me right, I get to go and I don't owe you anything. You just lose your purchase price. Too bad. So sad. See you later. Verse 12. He that smites a man so that he dies shall surely be put to death. Okay, now this is deliberate killing, because the word used for smite means to smite to death. Number 5221. And he just walks up to the guy and just hits him with a weapon or whatever. He crushes his head with a rock. That's smiting. Like Joseph did to the Egyptian. He killed him. Verse 13. Here's some stipulations coming. And if a man does not lie in wait, 6658, in other words, he's waiting for him around the bend of the trail, and he's going to get him when he comes. Well, he isn't doing that, but Elohim delivers him, 579, into his hand, then I will appoint, 7760, to you a place, 4725, where he may flee. All right, this is where the cities of refuge come in. If he didn't mean to kill him, they just got into a fight, and he falls down and hits his head on the rock. That's accidental. That's not laying in wait to do deliberate murder. Because there is a distinction made in the Ten Commandments about doing murder. Doesn't say you shall not kill. It says you shall do no murder. Big difference. Big difference. That's why they have manslaughter today and then premeditated murder, which is first degree murder. Those laws originally come from the Bible. All our laws originally came from the Bible, and boy, are they bailing out on them now. 14, but if a man comes presumptuously, 2102, upon another person to slay him by trickery, you shall take him from my altar so that he may die. Because they used to run to the altar and grab the horns of the altar like they seek sanctuary in a church. That's where that came from. Because he presumed to come upon another person and tries to trick him, and then he comes up and just kills him. He intended to kill him in the first place. So that's murder. That's death penalty. And he that smites his father or his mother shall surely be put to death. That's verse 15. You hit your mom or you hit your dad, they stoned you to death back then. Doesn't matter if they're provoking you. Doesn't matter if your dad slaps you upside the head. You don't hit him back. He's your father. You man up and you take it. Here's kidnapping. Verse 16. And he that steals, 1589, ganab, steals a man and sells him, 4376. They're talking about a man of Israel here. Or if he is found in his possession, he shall surely be put to death. Death penalty for kidnapping and selling into slavery. It shows that I'm on the air on my recording. It says I'm on air. I don't know why people are not hearing me, but it says I'm on the air on the notice up at the top. So I have to keep on with the show. It's being recorded. So I don't know why it's not transmitting. I'm showing I'm going out on butt. That's a computer glitch. I'll put a little notice in the chat room here. Just a second. I have to continue. Okay. And he that curses, 7043, his father or his mother, shall surely be put to death. That's verse 17. Verse 18. And if men fight, 7378. And one smites another with a stone or with his fist, and he does not die but is bedridden. Bedridden is 5307-4904 combined. Verse 19. If he rises up and walks outside on his staff, 4938, then he that smote him shall be free from punishment, 5352, except he shall pay for his loss of time, 7674. And shall make sure that he is thoroughly healed. If he has to have a nurse or some such, then he has to pay for the nurse. Okay. Verse 20. And if a man smites his Hebrew servant or his Hebrew maid with a rod, 7626, and he dies under his hand, he shall surely be avenged. And now that's 5358, 5358 doubled. Notwithstanding, 389, if he arises in a day or two, he shall not be avenged, for he is bought with his money. Verse 22, if men fight and cause injury, 5062, to a pregnant 2030 woman, so that her unborn child 3206 goes forth, and I have from her in italics, and yet no bodily harm 611 follows, he shall be punished with a fine 6064, according to as the woman's husband will lay on him, and he shall pay as the magistrate 6414 determines. And if bodily harm follows, then you shall give life. Give is 5414. Life is 5315. In place of 8478, life. I, 5869, in place of I. Tooth, 8127, in place of tooth. Hand, 3027, in place of hand. Foot, 7272, in place of foot. That's your eye for an eye right there, folks. And that should still stand. It would stop a lot of this nonsense. Verse 25. Burning 3555 in place of burning. Wound 6482 in place of wound. Stripe 2250 in place of stripe. Verse 26. And if a man smite the eye of his Hebrew servant, or the eye of his Hebrew maid, that it is destroyed, 7843. He shall let him go free in place of his eye. And if he smite out his Hebrew manservant's tooth, he shall let him go free in place of his tooth. Verse 28. And if a man smite the eye of his Hebrew servant. No, pardon me. I skipped a verse there. Verse 28. If an ox gores 5055 a man or a woman and they die, then the ox shall surely be stoned. 5619, that means to be stoned to death. And its flesh shall not be eaten, but the owner of the ox shall be free from punishment. Verse 29, but if the ox was known to gore with its horn in time past, and it has been testified, 5749, to its owner, and he has not kept it in, but it has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and the owner shall also be put to death. So if he knew that this was a bad ox, and it would charge and gore people, and he let it loose, he was responsible for it, and he would pay the death penalty for that. Verse 30. Or if there is laid on him a sum of money, 3724, then he shall give for the ransom 6306 of his life whatsoever is laid upon him. If they gave him an out and said that you're going to pay $1 million restitution, he had to pay it. Verse 31, whether it has gored a son or has gored a daughter, according to this judgment it shall be done to him. Verse 32, if the ox shall gore a male slave or a female slave, he shall give to their master 30 shekels, 8255, of silver for their purchase price, and the ox shall be stoned, because they had lesser status when they were bondservants. Verse 33. And if a man shall open a pit, 953. Or if a man shall dig a pit and not cover it, and an ox or an ass falls into it. Verse 34, the owner of the pit shall make restitution. One word, make restitution. 7999. And shall give money to the owner of them, and the dead beast shall be his. And if one man's ox injures, 5062, another's, that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money of it, and the dead ox they shall also divide for the meat, because they ate them. Verse 36, or if it is known that the ox has gored in times past, and his owner has not kept him in, he shall surely pay ox in place of ox, and the dead shall be his own. Verse 37, if a man shall steal, 1589, an ox or a sheep, and kill it to eat it, or sell it, 4376, he shall restore five oxen in place of an ox, and four sheep in place of a sheep. Now, if they did that today and forced people to make restitution, there would be a lot less thieving going on. Now, they were all talking about servants here. Hebrew servants went out in the seventh year. But if he bought a non-Adamic beast, they never got free. They were property. Like any other beast of the field, an ox or an ass or a horse or a goat, they never let them loose. They were not equal to a Hebrew. The Hebrews were treated different completely from the beast of the field. Women were different status than male servants. They were treated differently, with more reverence, kinder, gentler. In verses 2 through 6, you can reference Leviticus 25, verses 39 through 46. Verses 7 through 11 here concern a daughter of Israel. They would sell their daughters to be a wife, arranged marriages. Okay? Daughters were not as valuable as sons. So they sold them off. They did that in Europe for a long time. That's an Israelite custom. She had certain rights as an Israelite, but not as much as a son. And her purchase conveyed certain obligations concerning her treatment. And if her rights were violated, she was to be returned, and her bond price was lost to the purchaser. The master or his son could marry her, but if the husband took another wife, the status of the first wife must be maintained, including your rights to marital relations. In other words, sexual rights. He had to take care of her needs. And verse 12, it's quite clear as to murderers and the punishment for that crime. And you can reference Leviticus 24:17. And in verse 13, if it's not premeditated, the killer could go to a city of refuge, which was going to be established. You can reference Numbers 35:10-34, Deuteronomy 19:1-13, and the book of Joshua, chapter 20:1-9. Verse 14, premeditated murder was punished by death. Striking your parents was punished by death. A kidnapper is to be punished by death. You can reference Deuteronomy 24:7 on that. Verse 17, cursing your parents was punished by death. You can reference Leviticus 20:9, Matthew 15:4, and Mark 7:10. And in 18 and 19, if you injured a man during a fight, you were responsible for making sure he was healed and paying for his lost time. Common sense right there. In verses 22-25, if you injured a pregnant woman during a fight, she lost a child, you paid a fine determined by her husband. But if she sustained serious harm, whatever you did to her was to be done to you. Ooh. And in verse 24, you can reference Leviticus chapter 24:19-20, Deuteronomy 19:21, and Matthew chapter 5:38. Verse 32, 30 shekels of silver was the price for the life of a non-Israelite slave. And that's the price paid by the Pharisees for the betrayal of Yeshua Messiah. Wow. Considered him no more than a slave. Evil people. Now, verse 37, because this is the Hebrew order of things, is 22:1 in the King James. So 22:1 would actually be 22:2 in your King James when I get into chapter 21 here. We're looking at common sense law all through this chapter. And I'm not going to get into chapter 22 because it deserves a full show also. If we modified our laws back to the old ways, can you imagine the effect that that would have on our society, and the amount of repeat offenders that we have today that keep going back over and over and over to prison? That would all stop. All these murderers that we coddle, that break in and rob and rape and kill, they would be executed. They wouldn't be sitting in a prison for 30 years with appeal after appeal after appeal after appeal especially the beast of the field that attack and kill Israelites. All of that would stop. And our prisons would be emptied, because people that steal would pay restitution. And restitution is so onerous under biblical law, 4 and 5 to 1. I mean, really. Nobody would want a chance stealing, because if they got caught, they were going to have to work until it was paid. And if they didn't have money to pay, they were sold into slavery to pay it. Our laws today are 180 degrees opposite of the laws of Yahweh. They're designed to make a profit for the court system, the attorneys and the judges and the clerks and everybody involved with it. They're not designed to correct the problem. The prisons are a business. People don't realize that they are businesses. They're listed on the stock exchange. They're for-profit industries. And they employ a great many people. The prisons are tremendously overcrowded. They are warehouses for miscreants. There's no jobs even for honest people, because the industries are shutting down in this country and going to places where there are no onerous rules, and the unions don't have sway and ask ridiculous prices for labor. Fair is fair, okay? But you're not entitled to get rich at the company's expense. And the companies also have changed, and they are so ruthless, they don't care about their employees. The whole system has fallen apart there. Years ago, when I was young, you worked at a place, you respected the place, you respected your job, you respected your boss, and that respect was returned because you were vital to keeping his business going. And without you, his business wouldn't run. Therefore, he treated you well. There was mutual respect going both ways. And then the corporations came in and replaced the privately owned businesses, where you actually knew who you were working for. You saw Mr. Jones or Mr. Williams or whoever, and he came in and made sure everything was running right. He owned the business, and you could speak to him, one man to another. Now, there's stockholders, and there's a board of directors, and there's a president and CEO who lives on high, and you never see him, and he doesn't know or care who you are. It's the bottom line, the bottom line, the bottom line. And the love of money is the root of all evil. Not the money itself, not trying to be prosperous, or that's not unbiblical. Yahweh doesn't want you to be poor, but he doesn't want you to gain by gouging others and stepping on other people. And when the corporations took over, the unions really took hold because they were sweatshops, and they struck and basically almost shut down a bunch of businesses. And then you have a lot of unions that protect people that are dead weight just because they're union members. And this hurts the company. Well, in Yahweh's world, in Yahweh's rules, you would care about your employer, and your employer would care about you, following biblical principles. Bible-based employment. Love your neighbor as yourself, your other Israelite. They don't do that. It is a strange. This world is perverted. And one word. Oh, boy. It's being recorded, and you'll have to catch up on it later. Something's amiss in the control. So that's life. We're going to get into '22 tomorrow, and it's got another whole big bunch of regulations. Common sense. Everything that Yahweh has given us is common sense. The food laws, he tells us not to eat certain things because they're not good for us. If you had a child, you wouldn't tell that child it's okay to eat Drano or eat out of a garbage can. No, you'd care for that child. And you'd want that child to be safe and healthy because you love that child. It's no different with Yahweh. He wants us to be safe and healthy because he loves us. And he has given us these laws about food to keep us healthy. And a lot of the sickness that we have today is from eating bad, unscriptural food. Eating things that are polluted. Eating things that have chemical additives that these big corporations put in. And they don't really care about our long-term health. And these things are injurious to us. All of that is going to change when Yeshua Messiah comes back. The corporations will no longer be in charge. We will have our own food. It will be healthful. He will heal us. He will heal our planet, the earth. The soil, the water, and the air will be cleansed. There will be no more factories dumping poisons into our water supply or pumping pollutants into the air. And All of that will stop. And we will finally have a just rule. And these rules that I'm reciting out of the book will be in effect. And Yeshua will be our king, and we as Israelites will administer these rules, because the name Israel means you will rule or you will administrate as an El, a mighty one. And we are. We are Elohim in small g gods, divine beings. We have the divine spark that Yahweh gave to Ha-Adam, the Adam. He breathed into him and he became a living soul. He didn't breathe into the dogs and the cats and the horses and the cows and the non-Adamics didn't do that. We are special. We are set apart. Oh, you're a white supremacist. Yes. Yes, I am. I'm an Adamic supremacist. I believe that the race of Adam was created superior, and Yahweh said so. I have chosen you, Israel, above all the other people on the earth. Above. Deal with that. If you don't like that, take it up with Yahweh, the divine being that created everything. If you don't like his laws, you think they are harsh, take it up with Yahweh. You're going to have to take it up with him, because the Master Yeshua is coming back and all of these will be enforced. So you better learn them now. Those of you who are listening who are not CI, because you're going to have to obey them. It is coming, and he is coming. It's not going to be a bake sale for the Jews. Not going to send money over to Palestine. The Jews have never had a king. Israel has had kings. The Jews deny Yeshua as Messiah. We proclaim him as our king. And when he comes back and takes that throne and has that royal crown on his head, we, as Israel that proclaims him our Redeemer, will have eternal life. That's what's coming. That upsets some people. Well, I wouldn't want to live under his rule. Well, I'm sorry about that. Sorry about your bad luck. He's not given a choice. He's going to come. He's going to rule. And those of us that love him and love his law, as King David did, read Psalm 119. All of it. All David talks about is how he loves his law. Well, we love it too. Because it's pure justice. And that's what we so sorely lack these days, is the pure justice of Yahweh's laws. So, gird your loins and get ready for the battle, Israel, because they're hating on us more and more and more. Edom wants to destroy us, but they're not going to be allowed to, because we are the chosen people and they are not. No matter how they lie about us, the truth will come out. Our people, Israel, are being awakened gradually. Some are being called out, as we are called out. Yahweh called us out, and we hear his word, and we are his sheep. Well, there's going to be others that are going to join us. And here at EFR, it is our job to put this out there so that others will start to believe that we will get perfect justice, not the polluted, perverted court system we have now, but the justice of our Master Yeshua when he returns. This will be a glorious time. We will watch the earth be changed. The whole global planet will be under his rule. Not just one country. All countries. Every knee will bow. Every tongue will confess. Even non-Israelites, non-Adamics, they're going to be so overwhelmed by the word that comes out of his mouth. Those that survive what he's bringing with him, that flaming fire in the book of 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. The evil ones need to fear. And those of you who have not totally gone over to the adversary side need to repent. Repent, 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 and call upon the name of Yahweh and be saved from destruction. And acknowledge and proclaim Yahshua. If you are an Israelite out there of white Western European descent, you need to proclaim Yahshua as your King and Master and your Redeemer. You need to do that, and you need to do it soon. Because we're running out of time. With all the events that are coming on so quickly, the last days are here. And you must be prepared for the last days. I wouldn't say these things to you if I didn't care about you. You may be my adversary now, but if you are a fellow Israelite, I don't want you to go into the lake of fire. I want you to be with me in the kingdom, because that's what's coming. Thy kingdom come. It's coming here. We're not going to it. Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. His will be done here in his kingdom. No ifs, no ands, no buts. Thus saith the word of Yahweh. Give all praise to Yahweh and call upon his name and praise Yahshua, his only begotten Son, as your kinsman redeemer. And I'm going to leave a little bit of time here so the show can be repeated. They need just a little bit of extra time. So I'm going to say Shalom Aleichem. Peace be to you, Israel. And I will talk to you tomorrow. And we'll go into chapter 22 of Exodus. Praise Yahweh.
Onward, Christian soldiers, marching as to war, with the cross of Jesus going.